welcome everyone to another episode of Renegade Radio. I'm your host, Andy Lowe. We're brought to you by Renegade Concepts and the good folks here at Business Radio X. And today we're going to continue our mission of talking about how companies can get outside of the proverbial box, break those conventional rules of thinking, and do some things to innovate and drive revenue in their business, which is what we all want. Today I'm going to speak with Mark Spies. He's from 800 Degrees, and we're going to talk marketing and branding. And Scarlett Gordon from Into Publishing, and we're going to talk a little bit about specialty publications and what those can do to drive your businesses forward. So guys, welcome to the show today.
Thank you.
All right. So feel free to speak into that microphone there, Scarlett.
Okay.
All right, there we go. Now we got some sound from Scarlett. Had to wait and hear the voice. Okay. So Scarlett, let me start with you. Tell us a little bit about Into Publishing, who you guys are, what you do. Give us a little background.
Into Publishing is America's leading provider of specialty publications. We currently have over 100 area directors across the U.S., and we're in print in over 140 exclusive neighborhoods across the U.S.
Where are you guys based out of?
Wilmington, North Carolina is
Wilmington.
Our corporate office.
All right. Now, see, I've got this affinity for Wilmington suddenly. Not only do I have some neighbors in our neighborhood that are from Wilmington, but we're going to be going up there to do a half-iron distance triathlon in October. So we're just now discussing travel reservations, et cetera. So maybe we'll drop in on Into headquarters
Absolutely.
While we're up there.
Absolutely. They would be happy to tour you around. The CEO is actually a huge surfer, so he could locate the company anywhere in the U.S., and he chose Wilmington.
Fantastic. Well, great. So tell us a little bit about this. What is specialty publishing?
Well, we offer unique publications for homeowners associations and neighborhoods. The idea is to turn a neighborhood into a community. I'm sure you're familiar with the large gated country club communities that have a 1,000 homeowners.
Right.
They become what I call waving neighbors. As you're leaving for work in the morning, you wave, they wave. You really don't know what anyone does. You don't know anything about their family or their life. So our idea is to connect neighbors to neighbors and turn a neighborhood into a true community. And we do that by featuring in-depth profiles about the residents. We actually will devote a two-page article to a resident and their business or their family vacation or spotlight on their kids or who just moved into the neighborhood. So ours is unique because we're providing the news that they really can't get anywhere else.
Okay. Well, let's get to the nuts and bolts of this because that sounds great, but spotlighting my neighbor's kid and his soccer game isn't going to pay for the publication, I assume, right?
That's true.
So who's fronting the money here? I mean, how does revenue get driven through something like this?
We partner with business owners that are looking for ways to present their business to affluent and influential homeowners. Typically, a business owner knows their demographic, they know their market, and if it's a high-end, affluent homeowner, then this presents a wonderful way for them to connect with those residents specifically. When the economy went on the decline a couple of years back, business owners found that their marketing dollars really dried up, so they had to quit doing what I call spray and pray, where they just devote $5,000-$10,000 to a lot of different media and see what works. Mm-hmm. They really wanted a way to target their particular market very efficiently and effectively, and that's what we provide to them.
Well, let's talk about that target market. So you're talking about highly affluent neighborhoods, and I get that, but what do these guys buy from a print publication? What types of services or products are they looking for in a publication like this?
Affluent homeowners tend to spend a lot of money on their homes, number one, so this is a great opportunity for any type of contractor, roofers, landscapers, pool installation companies like that. They also tend to spend a lot of money on themselves, so it's a great vehicle for personal trainers, personal chefs, travel agencies, businesses such as that, and they spend a lot of money on their kids and their pets, so private tutoring companies, summer camps, mobile dog groomers, veterinary services, hospitals, things like that.
Okay, and what type of advertisements do they seem to respond to? I mean, I'm just wondering if this demographic is a little different. You know, you see things like, say, a Savvy Shopper magazine. It's very coupon, discount-driven. Do you find that that works very well in this demographic, or is it better to put a quality ad out about the value of service and you get a different response based on who's looking at the publication?
You're exactly right, Andy. Coupons don't work in neighborhoods like this because these people are really, they want to build a relationship relationship. They want to build a connection with the businesses that provide services to them. One of our most popular features is the sponsorship. For instance, I mentioned we would profile a kid in the neighborhood. We call it Kids to Kids. And we offer opportunities for private schools or tutoring centers to actually sponsor that article. That works really well for them because the residents connect that article and they're seeing their neighbor's kids every month who they recognize, they know, they play with them at the pool. And that article is brought to them by a business that's providing a service that they're actually in the market for.
All right, let me ask you the tough question here. I mean, what do you present as ROI to a typical business owner for this type of marketing investment? I mean, I'm sure what you get hit with all the time is somebody will tell you as a business owner, print media is dead. I mean, we hear that out there right now. What do you say to them? What's the ROI back?
Well, the typical print media is on the decline because the content isn't relevant to the reader. Their focus is mostly advertising, as you said, as you mentioned, the money mailer, the money coupon. Their purpose is just to drive a lot of advertising to the reader. Our purpose is to connect the reader and to provide content that's relevant to them that they can't get anywhere else. As far as ROI, it really depends on the business. We survey our readers. We know on average 92% of them use the services of the businesses in the magazine. So that's a really high readership involvement. And it really just depends on the business. I tell businesses it depends on what kind of service you provide. You know, if you answer your phone promptly, if you provide good service, if you go out, give them the quote, if you provide a reasonable price and a great service, you're going to get a good return. If you don't, you're not. It's just like in any world.
Well, let me ask a two-part question here. And the first part is, what is it about a publication like this that makes people want to read it? What are the things they enjoy and what really gravitates them to pick the magazine up and thumb through it?
Well, it's all about them. So that's why they read it. As one of the readers posted on Facebook, she said, I read this from cover to cover because it's all about my peeps. You know, there are a lot of newsletters out there that you can read that have what I call the news you need to know, when to take your trash out, when you can hang your flag, when you have to bring your flag down. That's not what ours is about. Ours is about the news the residents want to know. So, you know, oh, so-and-so just moved into the neighborhood. Where'd they move from? How many kids do they have? How old are the kids? You know, what do they do for a living? So-and-so just started a new business. Is that someone I could connect with and possibly do business with myself? That's the type of information that we're providing to the readers, and they love it.
Gotcha. So knowing that that's what they pick it up and thumb through for, the second part of my question is there anything besides just a pure advertisement that companies can do to engage the readers in this magazine that you found to be particularly beneficial for pulling in new business?
Well, our publications are really unique in that we offer opportunities for the business owners to connect with the residents through social and networking events. So we actually host events both inside the neighborhood and outside the neighborhood, and we invite select business sponsors to attend. So they're actually getting FaceTime with the residents, and that helps a lot as far as their branding and building relationships. We call it making them an honorary member of the neighborhood.
Oh, okay. And you have a good turnout, I take it, for this?
We do. We do. We actually have a waiting list of business owners who, you know, want that opportunity to come to a wine and cheese party or come to a business networking event so they can actually meet the neighbors. And they get a copy of the magazine as well, so they can read the article and say, I was reading about your safari vacation that you took. That sounds like a lot of fun. You know, it's not a sales pitch. It's an opportunity, again, to connect with the neighbors and build relationships.
So what's the distribution like here in the Atlanta market? What neighborhoods are you guys in, or what areas of town are you in?
Well, we've been in print in St. Marlowe Country Club in Duluth for about a year and a half now. The company is growing tremendously, and we're opening 5 new markets. We currently are opening publications for the Atlanta Country Club in Cobb County and Indian Hills Country Club, also located in Cobb County, Historic Brookhaven, and Chateau Lawn Country Club, which is in Hoyston.
So when we think about this idea of renegade concepts, and we talk about breaking the rules of conventional thinking, I mean, print media can often get classified into a very conventional thought process. What's different that is spawning this growth? I mean, I know I was looking at the growth of the company, and it's one of the 30 fastest growing media companies in the Inc. 500. How do you guys spawn that? I mean, what's so different about what you're doing compared to traditional media that's just causing this explosion?
Well, everything that we do is different than typical print media. One, we're partnering with the residents. I go meet with the residents. I sit in their kitchen. We sit around their kitchen table and we banner ideas about and say, what would you like to read? You know, what children would you suggest I profile? What would be a cool feature? What do you have coming up in the neighborhood that we need to feature? That's really unique. We have a very personal and intimate connection with our residents, and we're very protective of those residents because of that relationship. We're partnering with business that understand that it takes time to build a brand, takes time to build a relationship with a neighborhood. We're not looking for businesses that simply want to prey on affluent homeowners. So really, we've revolutionized print media.
Well, with these new markets opening and the growth of the company, I mean, everybody's talking about job creation. How about you guys? Are you guys seeing job creation? Are there career opportunities available within 2 Publishing?
Absolutely. The company is growing phenomenally. We're opening new markets literally every week. And we're always looking for new talent, primarily people with a sales background would be a good fit for the company. And we're looking for support staff as well, people that can run these events in the neighborhood and work as publishing assistants.
Are you looking for anybody to run the wine and cheese party? Because I got an application for you if that's open.
I think you would be great as the wine and cheese host.
I do too. Let's sell that idea.
Okay.
Well, great. So, Scarlett, let's say that a business owner is interested in checking out this type of publication for building their business and growing within a community. How would they go about getting involved, getting in touch with you, or finding out more information?
They can contact me, Scarlett Gordon, through my email. Would you like that contact information?
Yeah, let's give it to them right now.
Okay, Scarlett, Scarlett.Gordon at n2pub.com. They can send me an email. They can contact me through my cell phone, 404-512-6493, and we just set up a face-to-face meeting. It's all about finding out if it's a good fit both ways. We, again, as I said, want to partner with the right businesses, so I want to make sure that the business owner is on board with what we're doing, that they understand the process, and make sure that they would be able to provide the services that the residents are looking for, and that they would be a good fit for the neighborhood.
Okay. Well, do me a favor, Scarlett. I got more questions for you, but I want to bring Mark into the conversation. Can you hang out for a few minutes while we visit?
Sure.
All right.
Love
fantastic.
To.
So, Mark Spies, you're with 800 Degrees, and you are a relative novice, I take it, in branding. You got, only 17 years or so here? So you're learning the ropes, right?
I'm hoping to someday be senior guy, but I've got years to go, I think.
Fantastic. So tell us this. Tell us who is 800 Degrees, what are you guys all about, and what do you do?
800 Degrees is a branding firm. We're a small branding firm. And I've been working in branding specifically for, as you said, about 17 years. Prior to that, I worked in the typical marketing jobs. And it's funny, when I look back, when I first got into branding, and friends and family would say, so what are you doing now? And I'd say, oh, I'm working with a branding firm. They'd say, oh, you mean like the cows? And I would say, no, it's a specialized area of marketing that, and then the more I learned, it's just like the cows. it fundamentally hasn't changed in 5,000 years. Way back when, that guy put a mark on an animal, it was to show ownership and get credit for reputation at market. So whether it's a cow or a cup of coffee, the same thing holds true today. So we have been a small firm for about 10 years. Prior to that, my business partner and I worked at Landor New York, Interbrand, Future Brand, the big New York branding firms. And now these guys do great work, but we saw an opportunity to change that model a little bit, at least from our perspective. And offer a more a simpler, streamlined approach. I joked about being senior guy, and that exists, where there's a great presentation, a great pitch, you meet senior guy, a lot of good war stories about big brands they've built, and then you meet the junior team that's going to actually run the project. And we don't like to have junior guy. We have no junior guy. We're a small team of anywhere from 10 to 20 years of experience in the industry. And we really focus on, even within branding, a narrow band of branding, really the front end, the brand strategy, brand architecture, naming, and on occasion a little bit of design management.
Well, let's talk branding in general for a minute, and then I want to get more specific about the areas that you guys really dive into. So obviously, 5,000 years is a pretty long history for branding, so we don't have time to go through it step by step, but give us kind of the brief overview. I mean, it started way back when with a brand on an animal. Kind of fast forward us through the evolutions of branding, of where we were and kind of where we've come to today.
Yeah, in interest of time, we should skip over the first 4,900 years probably and just focus on the more recent history. Branding a lot of times was kind of done by default. You created a company or a brand, a product, whatever that is, and then you would advertise that product. And the net of that would be your brand. The irony is we don't own the brand. The consumer, the customer owns the brand because it's how they perceive us. So how we advertised, how we behaved, whatever that experience was, defined the brand. And whether it was 20 years ago or 50 years ago, that meant you would run lots of ads on the 3.5 TV stations that we had, and you would just say the same thing over and over and over. And we do things very differently today. It's much more about experience. As Scarlett mentioned with her business, it's really making a connection, a very relevant connection with your audience. So we've had to get very creative in how we make those connections. And it seems like it's changed more in the past 10 years than the previous 90 of this, if we're looking at this last century.
Well, let's fast forward on that topic for a second. Talking about making connections with your audience, obviously social media has greatly impacted this branding idea and this connecting with your audience. I mean, maybe tell us a little bit about in what way you've seen that really change strategy in branding.
Well, the first wave is confusion. Everyone knows that they should at least pay attention to see if it's for them. The next is figuring out, I know I should be utilizing this, then how? Is it relevant for my business? Is it relevant for my entire business or a segment of my business? Or is it a set of products within a certain segment of my business? So from a broad standpoint, it has at least changed how we have to consider where we're sending those messages out. It's added a potential utility. And I use utility because it's funny, when we look back through history, we've had several utilities that change how we would market our business. Clearly, the telephone was a huge one. Then we had TV. Then we had the internet. And if you go back just 10 or 15 years, there was a huge panic on what do we do with the internet? Is it just another vehicle to get our message out there, or does that become who we are? And we saw a lot of new companies created as .coms. We saw companies rebranding themselves as .coms. And then we settled down after a few years and realized, nope, it's just another channel, another medium to get that same message out there. Maybe it's a different message. Maybe it's a broader message, or we get to define and segment the message a little bit better now. And social media is having that same effect. We have more opportunity to talk with our potential customers, but at the same time, we have to talk to them very differently. We could probably define 10 very distinct mediums today. And within social, there's probably 3 or 4 of them. So the challenge for marketers today is deciding how we talk to each of those audiences and how our message has to change to be relevant to those various audiences.
Yeah, and I think you hit on it with the idea there's still a lot of confusion out there. I was sitting having coffee the other day, and I was overhearing a conversation with a business owner meeting with what was apparently their marketing person, and the question the business owner asked them was really interesting, and their response was kind of a deer in headlight response because I don't think they were expecting the question. But the business owner looked at them and said, after she had laid out the strategy that they need to take with their social media, he said, "So I understand social media. I understand our strategy and where we're going. Why do I need a website anymore?"
Yeah, that's funny. It used to be that your website was the center of your online presence. And this was kind of news to me just over the past couple of years. You had to have a website, and then you had to put all of your content in that website as if it were just some big online kiosk that people would come by and visit and pick up various bits of information and leave. And our web guy explained, no, think of it more like a satellite system or a galaxy, and your website is just one of those things floating around there, and it's tied to Facebook and LinkedIn and Pinterest and Twitter and all of these other things, and one isn't residing on the other. They're all independent, and you've got to create that search engine love by one linking to the other and driving traffic to the third, which is tied and retweeting to the fourth, and it's more of a complex network. And I got about half of what he explained, as you can tell by my explanation of his explanation. I was just glad that he works with us and he can sort most of that out for us.
Right.
Because it is a constantly moving target. We thought we had defined how we're going to talk to our customers. The hard part used to be what we're going to say to them. Now what we're saying and how we're saying it is just as in flux as any of the pieces prior to that.
So with all these moving parts and pieces, I mean, I feel like this is almost a rhetorical question, but can a small business owner manage all of this on their own? And if so, how?
Yes, they definitely can. And I think if marketers learn one thing from this, it's to get back to that fundamental idea. Because you can't have 10 different messages. You can't manage that much outgoing information. Remembering how you're talking to the various channels and the various segments within the channels and about the products in the various segments within the channels, it gets way too confusing, too difficult to manage. And I mentioned a few minutes ago that the message can vary, but it still has to be on brand. How you convey the same message is where that variance is. So with the when you've got so many different ways to talk, people to talk to, you've got to just get back to that fundamental idea. We refer to it as the original inspiring idea that became a brand. And it's almost like when, if you went back 10 or 15 years ago, it was manageable. And you could let yourself get confused thinking you had these three or four distinct positionings because your markets or at least the communication channels didn't overlap, that you're able to kind of keep those separate. That doesn't exist anymore. They're all talking to each other. You've got outbound and inbound media. You've got social. Your customers can now be your advocates. They're talking to each other offline, meaning not directly with you. So you can't have this disparate set of messages out there. So it ends up forcing the marketer, if they're doing it right, to get back to that fundamental, genuine idea. And if they stick to that, you kind of can't go wrong. In getting that message out there.
So let's come back to the front end where you guys spend a lot of your time working with companies. When you engage a business, what are some of the most important factors to kick off that engagement and really help them get out on the right foot? And by the way, you can tell me if we're talking, you know, do you deal more with companies that are just starting up and kind of trying to build a foundation of who they are and what they do? Or are more of these engagements with companies that maybe are already in motion but need some correction and course adjustment?
We tend to work with pretty large corporations. Most branding firms work with, if they're dedicated branding firms, they tend to be working with the Fortune 1000. They tend to be big budget companies. The smaller companies are going to lean on their general agency to handle everything from brand strategy, design work, advertising, PR, social, etc. We're fortunate in that we get to stick to that narrow band of stuff we know, brand strategy, naming, and design. But to your first question, I think clients are often surprised at the level of discovery in every project we take on, whether it's naming a product or doing a complete brand strategy and brand architecture system for a global corporation. It always starts with an in-depth discovery. We've just got to learn everything we can about the company, their culture, their market, their pipeline, the product itself or the company itself, their target audience, the buying habits, how they buy, where they buy, what the competition is doing, how the competition is treating this same initiative, if they're already out there, what theirs looks like, how they're going to market, what their positioning is. Just, it's about a 9-point subset in that discovery. And it's funny, if we've worked with a client for the first time, they see that as kind of exhaustive. And can't we just get to the creative? Can't we get to the execution, whether it's a brand strategy or, creating the name or naming system? And then we ask them how long they've been working on this internally. Well, it could be, 6 months, 9 months. And we find that they really didn't do this bit of front-end work. And then, we go through this process, takes a few weeks, and then there's one round of creative and everybody's happy. Because it's a little bit like going to buy a house. If you sat down with your real estate agent and said, I need a house, and he or she said, great, I know there's about 500 for sale. Hop in the car, let's go. You think, well, wait a minute. Shouldn't we take some time and define some criteria? How many bedrooms, near what schools, price range, that type of thing. And that's kind of what we do on the front end so that when we finally leave the office to go look, we have a very narrow band of solution on the other end.
So it makes sense that companies need to go through this. The in-depth discovery, I think, is a huge piece and certainly important. I see a lot of companies that offer advice that don't go through that process, and I think that's a real wrong road to go down. But How do you get companies to respond to that invitation? I mean, how do you go to market? I mean, it sounds like a great strategy, but I got to feel that these guys aren't just sitting around waiting for your phone call, right?
No, we've tried that. I have a friend who works for Atlanta, one of Atlanta's biggest corporations. We worked together in New York, and I was fortunate that we got to, you know, kind of shortcut the whole business development part because he moved down here, took that job, and called me and said, guess what? We've got a project for you. So if it always worked like that, it'd be great.
Right.
And I said, all right, Al, going forward, if I wanted to get into UPS, Home Depot, Coca-Cola, what is your advice as the guy on the other side doing the hiring? And he gave me this paradoxical answer. He said, well, Mark, I have to have already worked with you. And I said, well, that's great because I know you and I've worked with you. And if you can go from company to company, we're set. And then he explained it a little bit more. He said, look, if I haven't worked for you, you have to have worked with one of my peers, either in the company or a company, you know, like ours. And I have to respect that person. They have to be kind of a mentor, someone I look up to and think is smart and good at what they do. That's a pretty high bar. Doing an email campaign, cold calling, making that introduction is brutal. And frankly, it doesn't work. We've tried it, we've analyzed it, mapped it, and it has an embarrassingly low success rate that way. Social media has been huge. Sending an email to, you could send 500 emails and we may get one bite. But if we go to lunch with one client and ask, hey, who would you suggest? It's that classic model. It's just that word of mouth referral model that has built the business over the past 10 years. Social media has been great because it shortcuts that. LinkedIn was great. We link in with a client, look at their connections and say, hey, what would you think about making an introduction here? 2 weeks later, we're talking with them, and that's kind of been the newer model for businesses like mine.
So tell us, how would we self-identify? How would we know that we have a company that is a candidate for the services that you offer? And if so, if I think my company is a candidate, how would I go about getting in touch with you or finding out more information about how you might be able to help me?
We learned pretty early on the clients, the individuals who need to be sold on the idea of the power of the brand will never be a client. And so we realized it was early on, it was less about evangelizing and more about competing. 9 times out of 10, the person we've worked with is familiar with branding. They can name 5 or 6 firms. They've worked on branding initiatives either on their own or with an agency, and they get it. Those that don't see the need think that it can be done through, you know, kind of the old model, whether it's just, you know, advertising, saying the message over and over. They aren't going to be clients, regardless if they're a, you know, Fortune 500 company or a two-man startup. We've worked with tiny startups that have a solid understanding of the power of the brand, and they become great clients. And we've met with a couple $2 and $3 billion companies in town who just, they would rather spend the money on their next trade show booth than analyze their brand architecture and put together a cohesive, and that you can just see them glaze over. That they would just rather build something shiny for the next trade show booth.
Right. So let's say I get it. I want to get in touch with you. How do I do it?
Easiest way is to go to the website, 800degrees.com, because despite what our web guys told us, in my head, that is still the epicenter of our online presence. And but at the website, 800, and that's 800degrees.com, there's a little tab for to send a note or to, you know, to reach out, whether it's filling out a form or info at, that type of thing. Pretty easy.
Okay, well, let me bring Scarlett back in. I'd like to hear your take. I mean, we're kind of talking about something that's obviously central to what you're doing, which is branding, because as Mark pointed out, I mean, it's about communicating with the end user and building that relationship. And even though we're talking Fortune 1000 with some of this type of branding, it's got to be important to the person who's trying to build a relationship in these neighborhoods. What are some of the branding things that you see companies doing best with these specialty publications?
Well, it's interesting because as Mark was talking, as he said, his clients, the Fortune 100 companies, obviously that's not our market. We're dealing with, you know, maybe the local med spa or the local orthodontist in the area. But the challenges that they face are identical because they tell me, you know, this is my demographic, but it's so hard to get to them. They live in gated country club neighborhoods. The walls are really high in these neighborhoods for a reason, and I simply can't break in. Same issue that Mark was talking about with his clients. And what they say is, you know, I need to get into the neighborhood some way and build a relationship. How do I do that? So we find by organizing an event, like say an Easter egg hunt, and having that business partner volunteer to hand out bottles of water for the kids at the Easter egg hunt, they actually connect with the CEO of a major corporation. They might be an attorney who specializes in corporate work. They haven't been able to connect with that CEO despite the cold calling, despite, you know, multiple attempts. But there they are bonding over an Easter egg hunt. So hopefully that answers your question. But, you know, we find that, that it's much more effective to brand their business by developing a relationship first.
Mark, what do you think? I mean, obviously you're dealing with a little bit larger company, but, you know, what types of mistakes do you see maybe on the high end? Obviously, we said some of these strategies are the same. What are some of the mistakes you see in branding that, that would apply across all business platforms that you feel like companies make?
I have an answer to that, but I want to follow up on Scarlett's point. We work with really big companies, but there's a small company in Atlanta that I'm kind of their de facto marketing board. A couple guys started a Land Cruiser restoration business. These guys are kind of like one of those shows you see on TV where they, you know, like overhauling or whatever, you bring in this rusty, decrepit old classic Land Cruiser, and then a month later it leaves like it just drove off the showroom floor. So they have a very upscale clientele for some of these big projects and big restoration work that they do. And one of the challenges they've faced is reaching an audience. And they've talked with, you know, billboard companies, bus wrap companies, you know, all these kind of classic ways to get the word out. And after talking with them for, you know, we've been working on this brand for a couple of years, and they're actually doing really well, I made a decision last week to abandon all of the ways we've been talking about this. I said, guys, you've got to get into the neighborhoods. You need a local door-by-door approach, and not literally in the knock on the door, but exactly what Scarlett's talking about. Take these small, you know, whether it's 500 or 1,000 groups of what we would define as a target demographic, and go where they are. And we've talked about community newspapers and talking to them directly because they've got to build that relationship. And I think the only way that they're going to grow their business to that next level is doing exactly what Scarlett's talking about, is, you know, becoming that that partner down the street. But right now, they're just another shop in town. There's no relevance, and they haven't had that chance to make the connection. But you know, what Scarlett's talking about is, I think, the spot on, and it's funny. It's exactly what we've been talking to these guys about.
Scarlett, I think you just closed the deal.
And I think you did. Yeah. We'll connect after this, and I'll put these guys in
absolutely
touch with you.
I'll send you an invoice for a little piece of the commission.
So. Okay.
I've actually taken more notes on that for ACC Toyota in Atlanta to connect them. But your question, that the mistake companies make, I've said this line in speeches, 100 times, and I end up saying it slow and then repeating it because you can see them, the light bulbs go off a little bit. And it's stop competing with your competition and compete for the customer. And it sounds like a little bit of a word, you know, play on words and a pair. You know, what does he mean by that? And if you break it down, when you think about how many companies out there are competing with their competition versus competing for the customer, there's a couple really stark examples, obvious examples. When you have a company like Kmart, if you were to ask them, because I have, who do they see as their competition and why are they doing what they're doing? Of course, they're gonna say Target and Walmart. Mm-hmm. And we'll ask them, why did you do this? What was this campaign for? Why did you say that? And what was the purpose of this new line? They'd say, well, because Kmart did this and Walmart saying that, or Target is saying that. And they haven't, the light bulb didn't go off that they need to be going after the customer, not fighting these big companies. If you think about it, Walmart owns price. Nobody is going to beat them. You just can't do it. They're too big. They're too powerful. Target can't do it. Kmart can't do it. Sears couldn't, et cetera, et cetera. And companies have died trying. Target owns style. Walmart can't beat them on that. Kmart can't beat them on that. Target is, Sears has tried, and they failed. So I asked the guys running the Kmart brand, have you thought that there might be a third unique positioning? And it was just like deer in the headlights. There was this uncomfortable silence because it was very obvious they hadn't thought of that. They thought their job was to beat Walmart and Target. But their job was to secure a relationship with their target market. And it could be something very different than style and price. There are other reasons we buy. They just hadn't thought of that. So it's a big shift in how we think about our business when we start thinking about competing for the customer instead of competing with our competition. It's a huge shift, and a lot of organizations can't make that shift.
That's a really good point. And you said something answering a question earlier that caught my attention. I've heard this word culture come up so many times in interviews of late as people talk about businesses. And you made the comment about how companies need to get their culture out there to their audience. And it made me think, you know, one of the reasons people buy or you do business with a company is not what the company does, what their price is or any of that, but rather who they are, the type of company, really the brand, the cultural image of the company. It's like it has a personality of itself. It's kind of like, would we be friends sort of mentality. And Scarlett, I thought it was really neat because I know that's something branding-wise that your company, Into Publishing, is right up front about. They really put their mission and their objective on the webpage and kind of get right out there. And I love this. It says that their goal is to build a nationwide company that honors God, strengthens the family, and creates financial wealth for everyone involved. I mean, that's a really powerful positioning statement for the company. I mean, can you share a little about your experience of the culture at Into Publishing?
The culture is really phenomenal. One of the things that I appreciate about the company from the very beginning is that there's no discrimination. Literally, whether you're young or old, male or female, whatever ethnicity you are, everyone's treated the same. Everyone's given the same opportunity to build their own business, to own their business, and to decide how they want to spend their time with their family and how much money they want to make. And in my experience coming from corporate America, that's a really unique philosophy. But literally everyone's given the same tools and the same opportunity. And I think that's one reason why the company has grown so much. We just closed $1 million in sales in 1 week following our national convention in Orlando. So we're doing a lot of things right.
That's not a bad week's work.
Not a bad week.
So, guys, any final advice for our audience? I mean, if I'm out there and I'm a business owner and I'm trying to figure out what to do, let's assume for a minute that I'm a small business and I'm trying to make some decisions about where to put advertising dollars in branding. Maybe I'm managing it on my own. Maybe I'm seeking out a company. What would you advise them? And especially, again, let's stay with our topic here, which is getting out of that conventional thought process. What is kind of that like norm? Like, I'm tempted to do this because this is what I've always heard and what everybody does. But what should I really be thinking about is when it comes to branding and advertising and building a relationship with the customer?
I would say from my standpoint is know your target market. It sounds really simplistic, but so many business owners, that's where they fail right from the beginning. I meet with business owners oftentimes and I ask them what type of things they've done for marketing and for advertising in the past. And when they describe their campaign to me, it's very clear they did something that was their hot button that sounded exciting and different to them, but they weren't taking into consideration what their target market was. I met with a tutoring center. The business owner owns a chain of tutoring centers. And when I described our product, he said, oh, I've tried that before. It didn't work. I said, oh, great. Tell me what you did. He said, well, I advertised in a very high-end gated country club community where all the Braves players live and the NFL players, so we know where we're talking about. And he said, I offered them a free pizza if they would give me their personal email and contact information. And he said, I didn't get a single response. And I said, that's because they can afford the pizza. And there was this dead silence. And he said, where were you when I was coming up with my marketing plan? But, you know, it sounds like a really simplistic analogy, but you just have to know your market. I said, you know, the problem is these people can afford their own pizza. So, you know, I'm sure Mark can tell a similar story on a much larger scale, but you have to know who your audience is.
It's huge. We tell our clients it's not about demographics. It's more about psychographics. You know, their age, their education, their income, that's cool. That's neat. You have to have that. But you really want to know what makes them tick. What do they love? What makes them get them excited? What keeps them up at night? What do they worry about? What do they get excited about? These kind of things will help you not create your brand or market your brand, because then it's not an authentic brand. But if you take that step back and sit down and think about what was or is that original inspiring idea that became a brand, what gets you excited about your company that you're building and trying to turn into a big brand, and then align that with that small section of the market. And that's when you're going to build that relevant connection. And then you can figure out, how do I reach those people? Are they behind the gate in that big neighborhood, or are they going to the soccer games, whatever that is? But knowing your brand and then knowing who that's going to really connect with are definitely the two biggest and probably the most difficult steps for anyone building a brand.
Definitely solid information. And, guys, I appreciate you coming on today to share that information with us. One more time before we finish up today, Scarlett, contact information.
Email address is Scarlett, Scarlett, dot Gordon, Gordon, at N, letter N, number 2, PUB.com. Cell phone is 404-512-6493. And anyone interested can go to our website, which is N2Pub.com, and click on Find an Area Director and get in touch with me that way as well.
All right, Mark, one more time, contact information for you.
Best two ways would be the website, 800degrees.com, or my direct email, which is mspece, S as in Sam, P as in Paul, EECE, at 800degrees.com.
All right, thank you, Mark. Thank you, Scarlett, for you guys being on today. If you're listening out there, I think the takeaway from today is that you've got to build a reputation and a relationship with your customer out there and compete with getting the customer, not with your competition, if I understood, Mark, the way you put that correctly, which I thought was very true, very spot on. So hopefully you guys gathered some information. If you missed something today, please go back, listen to the show. As always, it's recorded and on our archives. This has been Renegade Radio. I'm your host, Andy Lowe. We were brought to you today by Renegade Concepts and the good folks at Business Radio X. We hope you'll tune in next time. And remember, opportunity lies in the impossible, but you have to be willing to break the rules of conventional thinking. Until next time.